Okay. Well, hi, everybody. This is it's always fun and to do this, and that's cool that you guys have a good, sounds like a good turnout for today's conversation. I want to talk with you about the idea that there is no problem-free small group system or strategy model, and then kind of tease out some of what I mean by that, and also give you an example, kind of think with you about maybe a couple of the more common small group systems or models, and then you can kind of see how to use this concept on your own. First, I guess to introduce myself, my name is Mark Howell, and I am currently the small group pastor, kind of, at a large church in Las Vegas called Canyon Ridge. My real title is community pastor or pastor of communities, and I have a team of folks that are on under my care and supervision who lead the adult ministry in a church of about 6,500. And everything that we do is really designed around groups with the end in mind being that we want everyone who's part of our congregation to end up in a group. And really our goal is to get to the place where we have more than 100% of our average weekend attendance in groups. We're about halfway there right now. And with the grand design or dream of getting to the place where we might even have maybe 150% of our average weekend in groups. So that is my day job. But you may also know me from my blog at markhowellive.com. And for the last 5 years, 5.5 years, I think approaching 6 years, I've been posting on the small group ministry topic, discipleship, spiritual formation, community building, all of those kind of themes, both strategies, tips and ideas, and reviews of material that comes out from most of the major publishers for small group ministry. And then in addition to that writing work, I usually have usually 4 or 5 churches around the country that I'm serving as an on-site consultant with. And then at any one time, I'll have a coaching call series set up with various people. That's how I met Angie. And, you know, and then in addition to that, periodically on my blog, I will have a series of some kind that you can subscribe to and participate in a several weeks of coaching that are by subscription. So, for example, right now I'm working on one that's called Design, Build, and Sustain a Thriving Small Group Ministry. You could see that on my blog, and that starts in September. It's a 4-week, 4-session process that will deliver a lot of tools that will help people kind of diagnose where they are, begin designing a system or a model that really will take you where you want to go, and then put in place the strategies that will help you to do that. So that's a pretty quick overview. Let me jump in though and talk about this idea that there's no problem free. And when I come in and do a on-site or do a coaching call, or it's very common for it to come up on my blog, the idea that there's no problem free. And what I mean by that is that, you know, when you're kind of trying to come up with what is the best design, what is the best system or small group ministry model, and really the idea of no problem free is much broader than just small group ministry. This is true in life. You know, I mean, there's when you're thinking about, you know, what car to buy, when you're thinking about what job to pursue, anything that you're looking at, it's a pretty good assumption right at the beginning to just kind of be aware of the fact that there's no problem-free solution. And when you're thinking about a small group system or model, one of the things that I always tell people is, you know, there's no problem-free system. There's no problem-free model. Wise leaders know that and simply choose the set of problems they would rather have. And this is a pretty big idea. I would say if you came away with nothing more than that and a sort of a disciplined understanding of that, that would be a good outcome from today. And let me kind of tease it out and give you an example. If we were going to look at, for instance, the free market small group ministry system, free market is a lot of times what people say that they have. A lot of times will correct people. And free market, based on a book that came out probably about 7 or 8 years ago from the folks at New Life Community Church in Colorado, is the basic idea is you have a semester-based system that really creates either a twice a year or three times a year catalog of the available groups. And that catalog can be print or online or a combination. And essentially what happens with free market is every semester or every trimester, the leaders of groups are given an opportunity to say, you know, here's the study that I'm going to be leading this coming semester or trimester. And a catalog would be prepared. And then there would be a ramp up or an on-ramp season that would happen within the context of the weekend service, and that would go on maybe for 2 or 3 weeks, and people would sign up. But they'd be signing up for a group that would last 8 weeks or 10 weeks or 13 weeks, whatever. And every church kind of has a version of that. So free market to me very specifically means this idea that you have 2 or 3 semesters, and there's nobody telling the leaders necessarily what you're going to do. The leader, kind of on the flip side, is asked in advance, are you in this semester? What study are you going to do? And then all of that information is kind of collated and put into a catalog of some kind. Now, a lot of times people pose the idea of free market as being really a great solution because it provides multiple on-ramps during the course of a year that can be, offered in the form of a catalog, and it can give you multiple chances every year from the stage, from the platform, to promote this upcoming semester. It's a great way to, you know, get connected. So that idea of publicizing group life 3 times a year or 2 times a year, a lot of times posed as a really great advantage to free market. A second great advantage a lot of times that is talked about is that people respond to the idea that there's a limited, that it's 10 weeks, and so it's not a lifetime, you know. And so a lot of times when you're talking with a free market advocate, what they'll actually tell you is the real advantage to this is that people will sign up more freely because they know that it has an easy off-ramp. So easy on-ramp is one benefit, you know, they'll pose a lot of times, and an easy off-ramp is another one. You know, that way if you end up in a group and it's really got some strange people in it or some, you know, people that you just don't get along with or boring set of folks, you don't hurt anyone's feelings if you get to the end of that semester and you just don't sign up again for that group. So when I'm looking at free market here, you know, and there are a number of things that you could do to determine the set of problems that go along with it. My observation, and by the way, in addition to the book that's really based on is called Dog Training, Fly Fishing, and I think it's Evangelism in the 21st Century or something like that. But if you put in dog training or fly fishing, especially you can read a review on my blog and you'll see, you'll get some ideas just from the review of that book. I would say Nelson Searcy's Activate is another good book about the semester system. And there is a free market element to what Nelson is talking about in Activate. So that would give you a couple of good books to look at. But as I look at it, what I would encourage you to do is begin to assemble a set of problems that come with what I just talked about. And, you know, one of the things that I have noted for a number of years is that as the number of groups grows, the difficulty of getting advanced information from a growing number of leaders, what they plan to study in the upcoming semester, to get that information and have current information from them becomes an administrative challenge the larger you get and the larger number of groups that you get. And if your church is like mine, you may be tempted to say, well, that's why we have administrative assistants, or that function could be fulfilled by, you know, this person or that person. But I would encourage you to list that as one of the accompanying set of problems that come with free market is you've got to stay ahead on accumulating that information. It's really the corollary of the idea of giving people three opportunities every year to sign up. That means you've got to prepare that catalog and have it updated three times a year in advance. And if your leaders are anything like mine, then what you know is it's not easy necessarily to get feedback from them in a timely manner. And so that's just an issue the larger you get. A second problem I think that I've identified that I know is a challenge for churches is that coming up with new leaders to basically who will come up with their own study that they want to do. And truly the way free market was initiated was that there really were dog training groups, you know, and there really was a fly fishing group or a, you know, some kind of an interest group that could be listed right alongside Bible studies, really with the theory that would help them connect a larger number of people. But my experience, another problem with free market is when the leader has to come up with their own study, when they have to come up with what it is that they're going to do, that limits the number of people who can lead a group to the people who are truly capable of coming up with their own idea that they could really be enthused about and entrusted to lead that study or that group. So that's a couple issues. And, you know, if I were to think back about the many conversations I've had over the years with people who have tried free market, one of the challenges that they always talk about is it's not hard really to keep the same number of groups, you know, because every semester they've got a leader or two or five that are saying, I'm going to take a break this semester. And then they're picking up another two or three or five who are new. And so they're staying more or less flatline in terms of the number of leaders of groups. But, you know, at the same time, what they will often point out is that in terms of percentage connected, they still are struggling to get above the 50% percentage connected line if they take their average adult weekend attendance and compare that with the number of people in groups. There are exceptions to everything, but if I were going to list out problems that come with free market, I would start with those. Now, if I step over, you know, and I were to talk about, you know, maybe as another example, another great example of a small group system or model would be the sermon-based system. And, you know, a good book on that topic would be Larry Osborne's Sticky Church, talks about the way North Coast runs their small group system. And it's a very good book, has some great ideas in it that will translate to many, many different models. So I highly recommend Sticky Church. It's an easy read, but it's packed with great insight. But some of the things that I would say about their system is, first of all, it's a semester concept. So in that way, it's similar to free market in the true way free market works. It's a semester-based idea. Different than free market, one of the nuances of the semester of the sermon-based idea is pretty much everybody at North Coast is using the same curriculum. So that removes the need for, you know, new leaders to come up with the study they're going to do. And that, I would say, that's an upside. That takes care of a problem that comes with free market. But, you know, so if I were going to really kind of think about the problems that come with the sermon-based idea, the semester-based, sermon-based concept like North Coast uses, and now we're going to go through and begin to list out the problems, I think you still end up with a little bit of a challenge recruiting the number of new leaders you really need to advance further in terms of percentage connected. Now, it's a little less of a challenge because, you're telling them what to do and that sort of thing, but in conversations with people who have wrestled with the sermon-based idea as they do it at North Coast, that's one of the things that they point out. Another thing that I think is also very commonly pointed out is the fact that when you limit what your congregation studies to the sermon, that does two things that should be on your problem set list. One of them is it limits. It'd be like for example, a Chick-fil-A has a great advantage in that they serve a great, high-quality product, very customer service friendly, but it's all chicken. And if you don't like chicken, then those people don't go to Chick-fil-A. By the same token, you know, In-N-Out makes a great hamburger. I know it's not in your area, but when you're out in California or the part of the country where they have In-N-Out Burger, it's a great successful chain for the reason that it makes a great product. But if you don't like hamburgers, they don't have anything else. And that's kind of one of the problems I see with the sermon-based idea, is that it really does limit the number of people who will respond to that. There's a lot of upsides too, don't get me wrong, because it gives you the opportunity to dive deeper into the topic, discuss it. It makes the concept that's discussed on the weekend very application oriented because you can build that into what you're doing. But, you know, it has that limitation or that problem that it is not for everyone. I think a second, and in my view, more important problem that comes with the sermon-based idea is that it tends to be used, I think, more commonly in churches that preach expositionally through a book of the Bible. And that's not exclusively the way that it's used. There are churches that do topics and, you know, do weekend message series that are topical, and they still have a sermon-based. But by and large, when you go to North Coast or the other churches that really made popular that system, that's what you find. They're working their way through 1 Corinthians or something. That is good, again, from the standpoint of giving your congregation that exposure and the ability to kind of wrestle with some of the parts of the discussion that weren't really dealt with in the weekend. A problem, though, that I see in it and that I always want to point out is when you have an ongoing study that is working through a book of the Bible, you're not always able to come up with a topic that actually matters to a neighbor in the same way that you can if you're using a more topical approach. If your series are 4 or 5 weeks long, if periodically you actually do with great intention a series that really is cross-cultural and will matter to neighbors and coworkers, friends and family, that
typically is not made possible with the sermon-based, with a longer commitment. So, you know, so far I've looked at free market, sermon-based. Let me talk real quick about, just for a couple of minutes here, about the campaign model, kind of as done by Saddleback. And so if you're familiar with Saddleback's annual churchwide campaign, or what they would call a spiritual growth emphasis, you know, that model, especially when it's coupled with the way that you sort of lower the bar in terms of who can lead a group, and you really make it easy for virtually anybody to pick up the host kit and go do this with a few of their friends. When you think about that, what I would say is it comes with a set of problems too. You know, and especially where you've lowered the bar and made it possible for pretty much anybody to jump in and host a group of their own friends, one of the things that comes with that is, you know, a lot of times a problem listed that says, you know, hey, we are not sure who's leading our groups. There's a little less certainty about the qualifications of the various leaders who pick up the curriculum and go do it with their own friends. The campaign idea equally can have a set of problems. You know, so for instance, churches many times will list that the campaign topic doesn't actually lend itself to being an invite series, you know, or by contrast, the campaign topic that you choose might be perceived as being too oriented towards unchurched people and not oriented towards depth. And so there's a number of things. So, you know, kind of the bottom line on this is that if you take this concept back and you really look honestly and with integrity at the system or the strategy that you've adopted or are considering, and really spend some time listing out the problems that come with that. And then you may have one or two other alternative systems that you want to consider. And when you really do develop a very thorough understanding of the problems that come with it, then wise leaders just take a look at those sets of problems and choose the set they would rather have and make decisions then about how to mitigate the problems that are on that list. So, for example, for me, as I've looked at the various models, the one that I gravitate towards is a campaign strategy like Saddleback uses. Now, it's really what they're using is very much a mashup of several different component parts. So they would have coaching or they would have care for leaders that would be very much kind of similar in some ways to the Metachurch model. And, you know, they would have the idea that you would need a certain number of people who would care for the leaders. So there's a number of elements. But as I've looked at the various models that exist, I really do find a tremendous upside in the campaign strategy. And I, when I look at the list of problems that come with lowering the bar in terms of who can lead, I can figure out ways to mitigate the challenge, you know, that comes with what happens when you make it possible for virtually anybody to pick up the curriculum packet and go do it with their friends. All right, now, Angie, that's the overview. The way I think about it is that way. We've got a few minutes here. Would you guys have questions as you're kind of thinking maybe even about your own system? And or you may even want to contend that your system is problem-free, and that would be a good discussion too. So anybody?
Mark, I have a question. So if there's problems with every one of these, then what do you do with the problems? You know, I mean, cause yeah. if you're doing
yeah, no. yeah, that's okay. So what I would say is this. There are problems. There is no problem free. And so, you know, a lot of times I add this line. I really do believe the pursuit of problem free delays more ministry than anything else that we're doing. The pursuit, the search for a problem free solution delays more ministry than virtually anything else that we're looking at. So what do you do? Well, for instance, one of the problems that I mentioned that comes with the churchwide campaign idea when you use the host strategy. So the host strategy is what Saddleback's popularized with the idea that, you know, from the pulpit, Rick Warren will talk about now the way that he'll actually say it is, if you have a couple friends, you could host your own group and you can stop off at Campaign Central on the patio and pick up your packet right after the service. We'd love to help you get a group started. So you could see right away, then there will be people who show up to pick up a packet that, you know, might not pass the sniff test if we were really going to look at who it is that's leading the groups that we're launching. The way that I think about that, though, is first of all, if they are inviting their own friends, you know, in other words, if I'm not publicizing their group to people from the congregation who are looking for a group to join, if I'm not publicizing those groups that don't meet some other criteria, what's the harm? Because pretty much in your church right now, and I would say this is virtually this is probably true in 100% of the churches that you guys represent. There are groups meeting that you don't know anything about who are picking up their study from the bookstore and in some cases are getting the recommendation for what to study from Oprah. Okay, so, what I'm talking about, a problem that exists within the churchwide campaign strategy, you already have the vestiges of that problem running through your congregation as it stands. You can't limit who leads a group. What you can do is, for example, here at Canyon Ridge this last year, the way that we ran that problem through was we said, okay, we want anyone who wants to start a group to be able to do it as long as they have their own friends. So if they have a few people that they could invite and they're picking up the curriculum that we chose that is really designed to keep the discussion on the rails with some quality discussion material and great teaching on the video, et cetera. So then what happened was when they turned in their host sign-up form, they got an email. And basically the email said from our pastor, love it that you've taken this step and we're so excited about who will be in your group and we want to support you in any way that we can. If you have group members already, please complete part A of the questionnaire that's attached and bring it with you to the orientation. If you need our help adding members to your group, please complete part A and B of the attached questionnaire and bring it to the orientation that you choose to attend. And so the reason that we did that is in part B of the questionnaire, we included several questions that would allow us to figure out whether we could actually recommend their group as one that people could join. And it included, you know, some questions. Tell us a little bit about your Jesus story. Give us your Canyon Ridge story. How'd you get here? And then we also required them to sit down with one of our coaches and have a 5 or 10 minute conversation about their questionnaire. And so that enabled us to determine whether or not we could actually promote that person's group. And things like membership are certainly important, but we wanted to know as much as we could about them before we allowed them to promote their group. So do you see what I'm saying? You may discover
a set of problems for the particular system that you've chosen, you know, you may actually do what I'm saying, where you go through and you think about what are the problems that come with this system? What are the problems that come with this system? What are the problems that come with this one? And then you choose the set of problems that you would rather have. Now, once you've chosen the set of problems, your job then becomes, how do I mitigate this, or how do I control the, or can I control the outcome given this set of problems? Can I somehow manage this to where I'm limiting our exposure? Does that make sense? That's a lot. All of my answers are long. It's not a simple thing. It's a little bit complicated, but completely doable. That you would have this, and I would say too, to kind of give a flip side, I meet people all the time who tell me we can't find enough leaders. Our number one problem, they will say, is we really strongly believe in the apprentice model. You know, we're kind of a cell-based church or a meta model, and we love the idea of apprentices, and all of our groups have apprentices, at least one. In some cases, they have more than one apprentice. They will tell me this. And in the same breath, tell me they are really having trouble starting enough groups to absorb the number of people who want to be in a group. And I'll say, well, then tell me a little bit more about your apprentice process. How many groups birthed last year? And they'll say, well, of our 25 groups, only five actually birthed and started a new group. And I said, well, do you have apprentices in all the groups? Yes. How come the other 20 didn't birth? Well, it turns out that some of those people really are more like a co-leader. Okay, and so the apprentice model has a set of problems that come with it. And you wise leaders look at that and say, how do I feel about that set of problems? Is that the set that I would like to have? Or would I rather have the set that comes with lowering the bar and figuring out, because I argue all the time with people, and I say, in my years of ministry in this, my experience has told me that most churches, the very best candidates to lead groups are not currently in a group. A large number of great potential candidates to lead a group are not even in a group. They're just attending your church. So if you're using the apprentice model as the way that you're replicating leaders or multiplying leaders, that has an inherent problem that comes with it, because if you have to get someone in a group before they can lead, that is a slow growth method. All right. I've got about another 5 minutes, Angie, and I don't know are we kind of at the spot here? Do we need to is there another question that we could answer?
Maybe one more.
Okay.
Okay, Mark. So you see a problem with taking several, because I'm looking at my own system, and I see our system doing a lot of the incorporating a lot of this stuff from several of these models. Do you see an issue with that?
No, I don't. I think, and it depends, what you have, you still need to look at the problems that are associated with the mashup that you ended up with, and then say, what are the problems we're currently dealing with? And, because if you just, and by the way, I have four different articles that if you guys will email me, mark@markhowellive.com, I'll reply back with an email that will have the links I want you to look at. And probably when I finish, uh, well,
probably in the morning I'll be able to download this conversation and, you know, put it as an attachment onto an email so that you can hear it. But I think most people have a combination. Very few people have a pure model that they're using. Most of us have some kind of a little, you know, mashup or a combination of things. You still need to do the same thinking about what are the problems that come with this system, the one that we've created, and what are the problems that might come with another system or two, so that you're actually able to say, we like the system, we like the problems that we have, and we like the solutions that we have. I think in diagnosis, a lot of times people will say, we feel really good about the way that we're doing it, but here are the problems. We can't find enough leaders. We can't find enough coaches. We have trouble getting very far beyond the usual suspects in terms of the number of people who are trying a group. And so they'll list off all of these problems that are part of their current system, and then they'll come to me and say, these are the problems we're discovering. And what I would say a lot of times is those problems are almost, well, let's just go back and say, at the starting point of this whole conversation, all of us should acknowledge this. Andy Stanley said, your ministry is perfectly designed to produce the results you're currently experiencing. Okay, your ministry, your small group model is perfectly designed to produce the results you're currently experiencing. The way I deal with that quote is to say, look, if you don't like your results, it is not a fluke. It is definitely related to the design that you've chosen or that was handed to you by a departing former contestant. Right? So your ministry, your model, the one that you're using right now, is perfectly designed to produce the exact results that you're getting. If you don't like the results, it may be time to go back and take a really good look at the system that you've chosen, at the design you've chosen, and have this conversation about No Problem Free. Okay, I hope this helps you guys. I have a meeting in 4 minutes, so I need to run down the hall. But, Angie, thanks for the invite and the opportunity to talk today. I hope this is helpful.
Yeah,
and I really do want to encourage you guys, if you'll email me, mark@markcowlelive.com, I'll send you back tomorrow probably. Just an email that'll have the links to the things that I mentioned. Okay?
That's great. Mark, thank you so much for giving us your time.
Thanks, Mark.
Thank you. It's always fun. Thanks for the invite. You guys have a great day in the beautiful metropolis of Kansas City and surrounding stuff. And it's fun being with you guys. Bye-bye now.
Thank you.
Thanks. Thank you.